Long-haul travel, and I say this with a certain amount of recently earned fatigue, can present as many challenges as it does delights. You're outside your comfort zone, you're outside any kind of sphere of control, and in the age of cheap airfares, ever-expanding destinations, and ubiquitous corporate convenience, it's not unusual for the needs of the individual to be subsumed to the machine of the travel industry. All of which I think is doubly true when those needs are particular and acute. For those living with a disability, travel, and air travel in particular, can at times be a difficult proposition. It can be trying, insensitive, even degrading. How good are our tourism operators here and abroad at understanding and delivering real, meaningfully accessible travel? Do we sufficiently cater for diverse needs? Graham Innes is the former Disability Commissioner and now Chair of the Attitude Foundation, an organisation which aims to change the way people think about disability. He joins us from the Sydney studio. Hi, Graham.
G'day, Michael.
And Martin Hing is the Accessible Travel Manager at Lonely Planet. Martin, thanks so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Martin, I might start with you. You're a keen traveller. You've worked at Lonely Planet since 1999, and you're also in a wheelchair as a result of a bike accident. Tell me, what's your mobility like? How has that accident affected your travel?
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm a classic example of how you can join a minority in an instant. I was commuting to work 200 kilometres a week every week until I was hit by a car, and thereafter I'm now a wheelchair user. My mobility, I'm very lucky. My injury is incomplete, so I can kind of ambulate. I can walk around the house, I can walk around indoors, but I am dependent on my power chair for any kind of long distance or outdoors commuting and travelling.
I'm interested and pleased that your work at Lonely Planet not only continued after that, but in a way it changed your role and gave you particular focus. Had you thought about the questions of accessibility and travel in your work at Lonely Planet before your accident?
Not at all. Not at all. It's something you just don't consider unless you're actually in that situation at all. And I'm very, very lucky that Lonely Planet did steer me in this direction after the recent restructure and my role went overseas, and they gave me this opportunity to explore this area further.
If I think about my old Lonely Planet guides, they would always have sections on what access was like in different countries and whether accessibility was thought about. How much is that an innate part of thinking about travel, and how much did your new role mean that you had to help Lonely Planet have a kind of cultural change?
I think that cultural change is still underway. At the moment, we still have in all of our guides a short section, Travel with a Disability, but we're not actually embedding access information into the mainstream content in a way in which I would like it to happen. So I'm still trying to lead the company in that direction. We produced our first access guide, and that was called Accessible Melbourne last November. That was been released as a free ebook download. Over 11,000 downloads since November. So there clearly is an appetite for that kind of information. But that was our pilot project, and we learned some things from that. But I still would like to mainstream this information rather than produce particularly access guides for accessible travel.
Graham, in your time as Disability Discrimination Commissioner, you must have heard many stories about the travel sphere. How do you think Australia rates when it comes to providing accessible travel opportunities for those with disabilities?
Well, I think it rates well, but I also think that we could do a lot better. And I'm really pleased to hear some of the things Martin has said about acculturating disability and people with disabilities into the mainstream of Lonely Planet. And I'd like to see our travel operators do the same thing. I mean, there are numerous bad experiences that I'm aware of that people with disabilities have with both domestic and international airlines. Most of them, I would say, relate to attitude and lack of staff training. So a negative attitude about people with disabilities and a very limiting attitude about people with disabilities and a lack of staff training and support. But unlike the US and Europe, who have significantly regulated their airlines in the area of access for people with disabilities, Australia has chosen not to do that, and as a result, we're disadvantaged compared to those two countries or groups of countries.
Graham, give us some specific examples of kind of areas of complaints, even specific complaints that you heard during your tenure as commissioner.
Oh, well, probably one of the most well-known ones is our famous Paralympic athlete and wheelchair marathon exponent Kurt Fernley, who at an Australian airport, I think in Brisbane, had his chair taken to be loaded into the cargo hold of the plane and had to drag himself across the tarmac to get into the aircraft. But there are numerous other examples, particularly of people with physical disabilities who are treated similar ways. I know of people who've been offloaded from flights when they arrived at the airport because the airline wouldn't carry their wheelchair, or where three members of the family were carried but the person using the wheelchair wasn't, so that they had to catch another flight to Bali. And I, as a guide dog user, have had many good experiences, but some significantly bad ones as well.
There was that recent, quite a bit of media attention about the case of Kim Jago. Can you talk us through that particular incident?
Well, Kim Jago has for some time been lobbying for what's called the Eagle Lifter, a cheap and simple and dignified way to move people with disabilities from their chair into the seat on the aircraft using a hoist lifting device. And this brings me back to my point about regulations. These things should be required in every Australian airport. And if our government was serious about access to transport, then that would have occurred. But it hasn't. So some of the airlines, and Qantas, who are not perfect, probably do the best in this sphere. Some of the airlines have these lifters. Sometimes you can go to an airport where there might be a lifter, but it's not shared between airlines because one airline's bought it and there hasn't been an appropriate sort of sharing system worked out. And in many other cases, people with disabilities are lifted from their chair into a seat. This is risky and undignified for the person with disabilities, but it's also risky and unsafe for the staff doing that lifting.
So when the technology exists, what possible reason is there not to have it in place apart from the venal one of just trying to cut costs?
Well, it's hard to find too many other reasons. You know, the drive in government for less regulation and the drive in airlines to cut costs. But airlines are required to provide reasonable adjustments for people with disabilities under the Disability Discrimination Act. The problem is that that system requires the person with a disability to enforce the law. Now, that shouldn't be the case. There are very few of us in the general community who have to enforce a law if we're not treated appropriately or given a provision for appropriate treatment. But people with disabilities are required to do this. And for most of the time that I was a commissioner, I encouraged, lobbied the Department of Transport and the relevant transport ministers to regulate in this area, but sadly to no avail.
Martin, one of the things that you've seen in the work that you've been doing at Lonely Planet, though, is the appetite and the need for better, more comprehensive thinking in this area. I mean, to what extent is this an untapped market that, if we're going to use the venal language of airlines and airports not wanting to lose business?
It's a hugely untapped market, and it's an underserved market. And there's a couple of things that really need to be said. When we're talking about accessible travel, it's very easy to think, oh yeah, somebody in a wheelchair. That's actually only 6% of the people we're talking about. Yeah. The market driver in this case is actually the retiring baby boomer market. The recent intergenerational studies have shown that already the 65-year-old people are 15% of the population. That'll rise to 25% in 2050. 40% of those at 65 are retiring with some form of disability. By the time they're 75, that percentage rises to 60%. And these are not people who are identifying as disabled, but they are people who have a disability or have access needs. They're also the first generation in human history who want to enjoy their retirement rather than pass their nest egg onto their offspring. And part of that enjoyment will be to travel.
How much is the kind of lack of reliable information about what's out there and what people are likely to face when they take those trips a problem for people with mobility issues, but also, as you flag, with broader disability issues?
It's a huge problem because only a fraction of the problem is a problem of infrastructure or kind of structural problems. A lot of it is you cannot find the information. And again, we go back not only to information you find on websites, but also staff training. So you can call up an establishment and you can ask about the facilities, and the staff simply don't know what they have available or cannot describe in detail enough for the person to understand that their needs will be met.
So
I'm sitting here nodding energetically, Michael, because Martin has really nailed all of those points. Yeah, it's a critical issue.
The problem of lack of knowledge and understanding, Graham, did that improve, do you think, during your tenure as Disability Commissioner? And is it improving still?
Hard to gauge, but if it did improve, it hasn't improved to a major degree. And I think Martin is right that there's just a lack of knowledge, a lack of awareness. Tourism operators, airlines particularly, don't spend time and resourcing training their staff, so staff aren't aware of the appropriate processes, even when they exist and are set out on the website, and I've seen numerous examples of that. But it's really got to the point where government needs to step in and say, we're not doing well enough here in comparison to Europe and the US, we're going to have some regulations.
And I think it's not only government, it's also in terms of travel, it's the tourism bodies as well. Mm. There are very progressive tourism bodies in this world, notably the UK, Germany, Flanders, Spain, and the changes have to come from the top down as well as the bottom up. And Tourism Australia and the various kind of state tourism bodies are simply not lagging behind the rest of the world, the more progressive tourism bodies in kind of leading that change.
Martin, I know that you made a trip to Montreal last year to take part in the world's first accessible travel summit. Can you tell us a bit about that trip? And in particular, I know you faced some usefully illustrative challenges on that trip.
Absolutely. I travelled through a number of countries on the way and had experience of the best and the worst, really. I went through Singapore, which is an incredibly accessible city for all forms of disability. I was extremely impressed. And then I stopped in India for 2 weeks, which was at the opposite end of the scale, where there simply isn't the infrastructure. However, you'll find, even though there isn't the infrastructure, the people there are more than willing to help. And there was, I had a minivan with no ramp, but every time I needed my chair lifted in and out of the van, I just gave someone a dollar, and they were happy. I was happy. So even though there isn't the infrastructure, there is still the possibility of traveling these countries.
Well, much there to consider and to keep mindful of into the future. We'll watch the progress of that with great interest. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you very
much. Great to be with you.
I've been speaking with the Chair of the Attitude Foundation and former Disability Discrimination Commissioner Graham Innes and Accessible Travel Manager at Lonely Planet Martin Heng. Share with us your stories, good and bad, about accessible travel. We'd love to hear your experiences. Find us on Facebook, on Twitter, which is @RNBlueprint, or at the Blueprint for Living part of the RN website.